Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Time for hour number two of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab, and a weekly appearance from Good Morning Football's Kyle Brandt, who has clearly got the energy and the testosterone flowing through his veins this week. Angry runs went to a new level as the scepter met an unfortunate demise this week with what did not appear to be have to contact the manufacturers or what here, but that thing just seared off in half with just, I got to believe that was only a 5 out of 10 in terms of force with your gesturing there with the scepter. Tell me if I'm wrong, Kyle.
You guys always bring up these Angry Run segments and forget that I black out during the segments. I don't know what I say, what I'm doing. And now that I'm seeing the video, look at this. I have the evidence, the shards of the angry scepter right here. You remember in The Natural when Roy Hobbs' bat breaks right before the biggest at-bat of the season?
Wonder Boy
or whatever it's called. Yeah. It feels like that right now. And you know what's funny about it? I've had this scepter through Josh Allen having heroic angry runs, through all kinds of superstars, George Kittle, Ezekiel Elliott. I think it broke while I was talking about undrafted rookie James Robinson of the Jaguars, who are one of the worst teams in the league. It doesn't matter. It does not discriminate. No. This thing broke. It was forged in the fires of Mount Doom on the mountain Sauron. Sauron's Mordor is his hood. So I'm going to have to get – it's going to be hard to get another one.
Yeah.
But it broke.
Because I'm guessing you don't have a bat boy to come out with another scepter.
A scepter boy? No, yeah, I don't.
You need a scepter boy.
And my six-year-old would love to do it, but he's learning how to say what 5 + 2 is.
Yeah.
He's homeschooling upstairs. So it's just me. We're going to have to get a new scepter by next week where hopefully – one of the Buffalo Bills will win it.
I was going to say, you said you black out during the segment.
Yep.
So I think what you were doing and why you broke it was because you were like, Josh Allen, you need another angry run. And then it broke.
I would love to. And you know what, Maddie? More so than that, how about somebody else on the Buffalo Bills offense wins this? We've seen Dawson Knox, who we know has been banged up. He won it last year. Josh Allen won this a few weeks ago. Can we get one of these Bills running backs to win one of them? Or a wide receiver, a tight end, anybody? I would love to see some new faces and new talent emerge both on the field for the Bills this weekend and in the world of angry runs. I would love to give this to Motor Singletary or Moss, any of them.
Yeah.
Come and get it. It's Patriots week. What are we going to do about it?
Right. So, Zach, it's funny you bring up Zach Moss because I think it's a player that maybe flashed a little bit last week in a way that we had not seen yet. And obviously he had the turf toe injury and that had slowed him down for about 3 games. He didn't play. But I think they saw him pop some runs last week that gives Bills fans anyway, from the callers that we've had on the show, hope that he can do more of that going forward. Because I think the general consensus this weekend, Kyle, is that the Patriots are going to drop 7 into coverage, force, you know, Josh to matriculate the ball down the field. And if they can't run the football and pull some safeties out of the secondary to convince them that, hey, we better get another guy in the box here if we're going to stop this run game, that it's going to be another Belichick defensive masterpiece and the Bills are going to have it tough to try to post a win finally.
I think it's beautifully put with all the intricacies of the running game, Chris, and it might be even more simple than that. You got to win this game. This is Patriots week. Patriots are a wounded animal like they have not been in 2 decades. the Bills obviously on a tough little stretch here with a couple of losses and then the Jets bye week at the Spa. If you are not going to beat the Patriots now, when are you going to beat them? Win now or forever hold your peace. I actually feel there's a huge stakes in this game for Buffalo because, God forbid, that team that just got bludgeoned by San Francisco that didn't belong on the same field, that team whose quarterback is in some sort of weird mojo-less yip state right now with Cam Newton, who can barely complete a forward pass. If Buffalo cannot beat this Patriots team, I may have to come on next week in a hazmat suit. Like, this is going to be an ugly, ugly scene. All the pressure's on Buffalo here, which makes me nervous, because what does Bill Belichick have to lose other than Buffalo, whose clock he cleans every single time? This is a huge deal for Josh Allen, for Sean McDermott, for that defense. New England's a terrible team, guys. I say that objectively, and I don't say it gratuitously. They're terrible right now. They have to win this game, Buffalo. It better happen.
We see the Bills drop week 5 and 6 against the Titans and the Chiefs. Two tough teams to beat. They end up losing both, but they beat the Jets, although they were 0-for-5 in the red zone, had to rely on Tyler Bass, the rookie, to kick those 6 field goals to win the game. Do we need to see a dominant offensive outing from the Bills against the Patriots this week, or is just any type of win okay here?
It's a great question, because I'll be honest, I don't care what happened against the Jets. I know that if you're really gripping on tight to this team and you're a diehard and you live and breathe Bills football, you were not feeling great about that win. I don't care. It was barely a football game with the Jets. I really mean it. They almost don't qualify as a real competent NFL team. All I cared about was just go in there. I don't care if you kick 20 field goals. It's such a bad team that just get the win and come home. They did. I'm not going to scrutinize for style points against New York. However, there's two schools of thought with New England. One is, all right, if we're really good, if we're a playoff team and we just saw San Francisco house New England and a few other teams do it, then why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we win this game 31-13 against a team that is chasing its tail? I'm not going to say it either. Beat Bill Belichick 2-0 or 56-54. All I want is a win. It's Belichick. It's the Patriots. I don't care if Brady's there or not. It feels like it's been since I was in about eighth grade since the Bills have beaten the Patriots in a game that really matters with their starting quarterback in. So I'm not looking for style points either. Standings, a win. If the Bills have a bigger number of points than the Patriots, that is a huge victory because it's been time and time again that they haven't. Never mind how many points they win. Just win the damn game.
Yeah, we're just hoping that, you know, the freaks don't come out at night and Houdini singing on the weekend for Halloween here with what the Patriots seem to dish out each and every time. I know, Kyle, that you were talking recently on a podcast about Rocky IV, the merits of Rocky II, the montage argument about the training montages. I was always a big fan of the Rocky II montage because that was really the last time it was truly old school in the Rocky series. You know, Mick's still there shouting at him. He's still chasing the chicken. but you guys were big fans of the Rocky IV montage. So I will say that I haven't watched that movie in about 12 years. So I reran the montage on YouTube. It's pretty good. I got to say, it's pretty good. You know, he's growing the beard. He's out in the in the old country somewhere in Russia. And I think that it's some of the most impressive training. And he is more ripped up in 4 than he is in 2. I don't argue that at all. What is the appeal, though? What sold it for you? Because I'm curious about this as we dip into the movie scene.
Okay. I'm glad you asked, Chris. You're talking, of course, about the Rewatchables podcast on The Ringer.
That's right.
That I did with Bill Simmons. And we did Rocky IV, where you go back and you look at the old movie and you have debates about it. Understand, for everybody listening and for the two of you here, the first Rocky movie that I ever saw was Rocky IV. It came out when I was 6 years old, so I never saw Rocky I and II. I've seen them now, but I saw Rocky IV first. So all that backstory about Adrian, we did it, and Mick, and I didn't know any of that stuff. I just liked the tall Russian guy and his wife, who looks like his twin sister, and the working out and the steroids in the mountains. That was all I needed. And yet, going back to look at it, and Chris, obviously you're an expert. Maddie, I have to ask before we go any further, have you seen Rocky IV?
Yes, I have.
Her family's actually a big Rocky movie watcher, right?
I don't know. Okay, I don't know how many years ago it was, but we got in this Rocky phase and watched a ton of them. So,
yes, they're very popular in Philadelphia, as we know. My question is this, and this is my takeaway, having not watched it a long time myself. And I hate that this may come off as sacrilege. Is Rocky Balboa literally the worst boxer of all time. I mean, really that bad. Let me tell you what I mean. The only things he brings to the ring, he has great conditioning and an unbelievable chin, the greatest chin of all time. However, he has no defense, no escapability, no strategy, no power whatsoever. He just sits there and then gets his face beaten in and then wears him down after a while. He seems to have no grasp whatsoever of boxing.
The rules are
no
also
strategy.
The rules are also
the corner.
Yeah.
No, they're all there's no rules, no strategy.
There's like 17 knockdowns.
Duke says like he never says, let's work the jab. Watch out for his right. It's just no pain. Take his heart. That's not helping anybody. The only person who gives him some actual advice is his drunken brother-in-law, Polly, who says hit the one in the middle when he's clearly concussed and sees three of them. So I don't know how Rocky gets through any of the fights because I think he might be the worst boxer to ever live. He just can take a lot of pounding.
Yeah, and I just love how the rules are completely out the window. There's like 17 knockdowns every fight. It's like, where is the TKO here? Where is the TKO? This guy can't even see straight, and we're going to keep on fighting. It's just, it's insane.
Yeah.
So we found that conversation very interesting. I know we also wanted to discuss with you because the DK Metcalf chase down, which incidentally, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but it looked like somebody who is gigantic was chasing down a Smurf. I mean, is it me or did he look like he was two times the size of
he was Bigfoot chasing
he
down
looked like,
somebody in the
I mean
forest.
It was crazy. He just you see him running him down and it's just like, oh my god, he's a foot taller than him too.
Yeah, well, what you're referring to with the Smurf reference, Chris, of course, is Gargamel. He looks like Gargamel.
There we go.
Or his cat Azrael.
Thanks for
There's
placing that
now,
for me.
Buda Baker runs a 4'4" in the 40. He's very fast. And to your point, yes, Matt, he does kind of look like a Bigfoot in the forest, except now we have actual video evidence of it. The reason I found this interesting was today I went down a wormhole. I said, all right, this was is this the best chase down ever that we've ever seen in the NFL? So I started going through some of them. And Benjamin Watson from the Broncos and the Patriots when he chased down Champ Bailey, unbelievable game. Obviously, we know that Don Beebe chased down Leon Lett, but I did not know this one. And Bills fans remember this. 1989, Deion Sanders is a rookie with the Falcons. It's Bills Falcons. Beebe's returning a kickoff, breaks through. He's in the clip. Oh, we have it.
Yes. We're good.
This is 1989, week 16. Don Beebe, one of the fastest athletes in the world, is going to run through the scrum, and he is gone. Now, wait a second, though. A rookie out of Florida State named Deion Sanders runs Beebe down from behind and drags him down. It's a bookend to the Leon Lett play. Everybody knows the Leon play. I had never seen Deion chase Beebe. Do Bills fans know this play? Is this part of the lore?
No, it is not. It is not at all. I had completely forgotten about it myself. I will say this. We knew that Beebs would run anywhere from 4.3 to 4.35. And I think we all know the Deion Sanders combine story where he basically ran like a 4.27 and then jumped in a cab and went home and said, I don't have to do the rest of the workout. So on a stopwatch, he is faster than him. So I guess seeing it now after not seeing it or completely remembering it in any way, shape, or form, it doesn't surprise me. I will submit my
what do you got?
Ultimate chase down guy. It's Daryl Green from the Washington – we can't call them what they used to be called back then, the Washington football team.
Yeah.
He had about five or six of those in his career, like just time and again, which I don't know what that says about the deep ball defense of the Washington team as a whole back in those days. But since this poor guy's got to chase people down because he's the only guy that can run fast enough. But somebody ran a montage actually this morning on Twitter. He's got like five of them that they ran on a reel back to back. It's impressive.
And it's the quality of the opponent. Like in the boxing game, a quality opponent that matters here. If Buda Baker is fantastic player, but he's not a living Hall of Famer. Daryl Green has two of them that I can remember off the top of my head. One of them is against Eric Dickerson, Hall of Famer, who was broken away. And the other one was against Tony Dorsett, Hall of Famer, who had broken away. So it's the big names and the marquee that gets you up there like that. Buda Baker is a great name in and of itself, and he's a great player. But it's as if he had run down, you know, Darrell Revis or Deion or Champ Bailey, as we've seen showing up in some of these clips. Daryl Green is really an all-time rundowner. But oh my God, the DK thing. He looks like he's about 350 pounds too when he's doing it. It's so terrifying.
It's absolutely insane. Let's get back to the conversation on the Bills against the Patriots. Is COVID-19 still chasing down Cam Newton? Speaking of chase down plays, what's going on with Cam Newton? You guys had a great conversation on GMFB this morning about what's up with Cam Newton. Some great takes. What do you think it is? Why did he throw three interceptions under 100 yards? Is he in his own head? What? I don't know. Do you know?
I'm trying to figure it out, and I'm trying to do it respectfully. I'm not a sports therapist. I'm not a psychiatrist or a doctor, but I know Cam Newton's game really well, and he has nothing right now. And what do I mean by that? If he checks out, he's physically healthy. The doctors say he's fine. He doesn't have a shoulder problem. He doesn't have a back problem. To me, he looks like he has a psychological problem because this dude came back from being on the COVID-19 list, missed a couple of weeks, and almost has a Chuck Knoblauch-like yips throwing the football. To me, having watched him for years, I don't recognize this athlete. I don't recognize this person. Not only in his body language on the field, but off the field. He had comments where he talked about when he found out that his teammate, Stephon Gilmore, had tested positive, that it was Cam's nightmare, that he felt like he might have been responsible for that, and that he infected a teammate, or that he spread this thing amongst the team. I think he is in his head right now. I don't know if he is depressed or if he has anxiety. We all can relate in a certain sense that we either know people directly or know people who have tested positive and go into a funk, this funk of, oh my gosh, I have it. I have the sickness. Listen, maybe Cam just lost and his game fell apart, and I'm trying to do this respectfully, so I don't want to cast anything on him to belittle him psychologically, but my job is to sit here and look at what I see. Since before COVID, looked great. Since then, afraid of his own shadow, completely lacks any confidence, and I don't know, maybe something, this thing can rattle somebody's cage like that, and then if you think you spread it to a teammate, there's a guilt factor involved. I think he is greatly wrestling with what's going on between his ears right now, and just watch against the Bills next week. See if there's a single smile, a single head nod from Cam Newton. We've seen him down before and playing poorly. We've never seen this. In his entire career, he's never looked as poor as he has in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because he's a guy that definitely brings a lot of swag to his game. I mean, every time he gets the first down, we know the signal that he makes, you know, pointing down the field, and there's an ear-to-ear smile there. And to hear you say that that's really hasn't been part of his game the last couple of weeks is in stark contrast to what we're all accustomed to. And Maddie and I were actually talking about it earlier on the show, Kyle, the fact that Coach Belichick was actually asked if he thinks that Cam is suffering from that brain fog situation that some people who recover from COVID experience, where they can't multitask, they can't remember something that they talked about 5 minutes ago. I mean, you can't play quarterback if you've got that. Now, I know Belichick didn't give the answer that maybe some reporters were looking for to excuse Cam's play, but I mean, you got to wonder, man, if he's looking this different from what everybody's accustomed to seeing.
It's the only thing I can come up with in my armchair analysis, because again, he's healthy and he looked really good, not only running but throwing. That game, you go back, obviously the opener, they lost the game to Seattle in the last play of the game, in which he looked great. Now remember, about 3 weeks ago, the conversation was the Patriots should extend Cam long term. This should be their guy for the next 5 years. Now it's like, who else do we got? Get Stidham in there. And they're not doing it. Belichick also said, I think it was yesterday, he said, he's the best we have at this position, meaning Cam. All I know is this, if someone, a friend of yours or a coworker of yours or somebody looked right now in their life like Cam Newton does in his, you'd check in with them. You say, you doing all right, man? You need to get checked out? You need to talk to somebody? There's something going on, and it's not physical. And I just find it a really, really ripe coincidence that it would come right after he tests positive for COVID-19, as do some of his teammates. I think it's in his head.
This Patriots team is 2-4. They certainly look way different than they have in years past. The trade deadline is looming. Could we see the Patriots move on from any players ahead of that trade deadline?
You know, we talked about that this morning, too. The idea that the Patriots, never mind buyers, never mind let's go get a linebacker, let's get a tight end, sellers of saying, let's wrap this thing up. It's really hard for me to imagine that. It is. And because I just think that Belichick has too much pride. Sure, he's the ultimate strategist, but it's also still early. And let's be honest, they've had the Bills' number for years, recent history. And if they can beat Buffalo this week and all of a sudden the clouds start to go away, it seems a little bit better. I just know that I want to say one other thing about the Patriots, and a lot of people are saying, well, I guess we learned that it was all Brady all along, and look what Brady's doing, look what Belichick's doing. We can finally wrap that up after 20 years. Brady carried this thing. I'm not so sure about that. Let's not forget that this Patriots defense that was battered by the Niners last week lost Dante Hightower, their best linebacker, to an opt-out. Yep. They lost Patrick Chung, one of their most reliable tacklers, to an opt-out. They lost their starting quarterback for a couple weeks to COVID-19. They lost the defensive player of the year. I think more than any team in the league, they have been hammered by COVID, both in the preseason and during the season. I don't think this is a wrap. And everybody already writing the epitaph about the Bill Belichick era, now that Tom Brady is gone, just wait. Talk to us in a month. I actually do not think there'll be a lot of movement with the Patriots at the deadline, and I don't think they're dead. And Bills better take care of business this weekend.
All right, last thing for me, Kyle. Let's take a
spin. Yes.
I'm going to spin the dial for you. You can pick whatever you want from this dial around the NFL.
All right, okay? I love it.
So you're either going to talk to me about your take on Antonio Brown now with the Bucs,
okay,
Odell Beckham Jr.'s injury with the Cleveland Browns, or the defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys struggling with Tabasco sauce. Take your pick.
I mean, Chris, I think you know where I'm going. Odell, I hate the injury. We never fun. Antonio Brown, well, that's a topic for next week. Let's see him on the field first. There's just something unbelievably, I think the word is meta, about the defensive coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys, who overseen maybe the worst defense in history, who can't even get through the press conference without literally burning his eyes out. Now, there's a lot of theories that he put that Tabasco in his eyes on purpose to wash out the sight of the tape he had just seen of his defense on the field. I don't subscribe to that. Would you rather watch, though, one series of the Cowboys playing defense or take the Tabasco right in the eyes? That's the Sophie's choice as far as I'm concerned. My other take is red Tabasco sauce, not a fan. Not really into it. I don't know who's slopping that all over their lunch. I hope it was worth it, Mike Nolan, because frankly, I'm a green Tabasco sauce guy, and I think Tabasco is sort of middle-of-the-road condiment, not worth the fiery burning in the eyes to begin with.
What you should try is Frank's Red Hot, which is made here in Buffalo. So that's actually
way classier than Tabasco.
Yeah.
If it was Frank's, that's a classy move. I'd be willing to bet that the Steelers coaches have Frank's in their eyes, maybe the Bills coaches. Dallas, Tabasco, America's sauce, allegedly.
And I'm sure you've also heard the other theories about why Nolan did that. One was he didn't want to look at his defense anymore. And the second one was he's better play caller blind than he would be if he could see the field and his players out there, which I thought was a little over the top.
Ooh.
There. Thought that was a little
you
over the
what,
line.
You know what, though, Chris? A season has to hit rock bottom before you can rebuild. I remember about 4 years ago, the Jeff Fisher Rams were a terrible team, and there was a moment in the middle of the game where he wanted to challenge a call and could not find the challenge flag in the pockets of the parka that he was wearing. It was a ridiculous look. He couldn't challenge it because he couldn't find the flag. And I'm like, all right, the Rams just hit rock bottom. Now they can build their way up. Nolan Tabascoing his own eyeballs in the middle of the worst defensive performance in history. We got rock bottom, baby.
Yeah, the turnaround.
That's it. Now the healing can begin. This might be a good thing.
Yeah, they're already saying that they should call them the Alice Cowboys because there's no D in Dallas. It's getting bad on social media. If you don't have to cruise around far on the social media wormhole to figure out what's going on there. All right, I do know that you like to give us a score every week, so why don't you do that for us, Bills Patriots?
Okay, Bills Patriots. Oh, by God, the Bills better win this game. If I come on next week and the Bills don't win this damn game, everybody cross your fingers. I said earlier, I don't care if it's 2-0. As long as they have more, here's what I'm going to say. I think it's going to be really close.
Yeah.
Like, I think the Patriots are going to have something. And I think it's going to be low scoring. Ugly game. Bills 16, Patriots 14.
Wow.
Buffalo wins 16-14. Low scoring game, sloppy as hell. But Buffalo wins, so who cares? Exercise the demons.
All right. We appreciate the time as always, Kyle. Thanks for the insight, and we'll let you know if Dallas finds the D for the first letter in their city's name.
Thank you. If anybody knows a good scepter guy, look me up. I'll give you a plumber or a contractor. I need a good scepter guy.
Good scepter guy. All right. We'll work on that. Thanks, Kyle. All right, Kyle Brandt from Good Morning Football. Always an entertaining conversation. And I'm sure he appreciates that you're watching the show and hitting him up with follow-up questions on their debates every day. That was good.
Oh, yeah. It's my show I watch every morning while I'm getting ready. It gets me ready for the day of football, and they are just so dang entertaining.
Well, yeah,
and hilarious.
And there's two Chicagoans on there, right?
Yep, Kyle and Kay.
They're both Chicagoans, so how couldn't you watch? All right, we have to take a break, but when we come back, I think we're going to take some phone calls, and if there's time, we might see what's for lunch, because we haven't had lunch in a while on the show, and we want to get to that. So we will try to do that when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.